Hey everybody, welcome to Glitchy Pancakes, real talk about the world of fandom. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Rob.
And I'm Allie.
And today we're going to talk about J.K. Rowling. Yes, we're going there. We have to do it. It's happening. It must be talked about. To help us delve into this, we have a very exciting guest, Mallory Cooper, former software architect and CTO, now the author of over 100 speculative fiction works set in the Eon 14 universe, published under the name M.D. Cooper. Along with her wife, author Jill Cooper, Mallory runs The Writing Wives, a marketing advisory firm for authors. Check that out. And together they also own the Wooden Pen Press. Welcome, Mallory.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, everyone.
Yes, thank you for being here.
Thank you for being here.
So, yeah. J.K. Rowling, how about that? This little background for anyone who hasn't kept up with it, and you're just been hearing, like, you know, sometimes you'll see a tweet, like you'll see people saying, "Oh, I didn't," you know, like it's comments on something that's happening, and you're like, "But what's the source of this?" Anybody that doesn't know, J.K. Rowling's been causing a bit of a stir for a while because of transphobic messaging and tweets and things like that, which have been sometimes explained away, sometimes excused by her spokespeople or by herself. This is stuff essentially denying the status of trans women as women, stoking fears about the dangers of accepting trans people into society. Pretty awful stuff. She wrote a long blog post where she talked about 5 reasons for being worried about the new trans activism. She perceives that as a threat for some reason. Most recently, and what's sort of kicked this back up, is that she's got a detective novel coming out. It's the 5th in a series she publishes under the pen name Robert Galbraith, and we'll talk about that name in a minute. The basic plot is that a cisgender man dresses as a woman to kill women. This is at the point now where this is a pattern with her, and it's no longer... it's really hard to mount any sort of reasonable defense of what she has said and done, because it's a pattern, and now she's not even hiding it anymore. I mean, it's just outright, it's out there, transphobia. So everyone's heard about this already, right? Like, so the main thing that makes this, like, the only reason that this is more notable than any other people being jerks or transphobes or bigots, is because, of course, J.K. Rowling wrote the Harry Potter books, which many, many millions of people are fans of, grew up with. So how did each of y'all come into, like, how did you find the Harry Potter universe? Like, what did it mean to you if you were fans of it? And Mallory, were you a fan or reader?
I saw the first 2 or 3 movies. I think I've always been a huge fantasy fan. So when I saw, I knew about Harry Potter, but I hadn't been reading it. But, you know, when I saw the trailers for the first movies, they looked exciting. You know, they had fantasy fun stuff, and, kind of felt to me like it might be a little bit like Chronicles of Narnia in a way, because it's like set in England. It has a lot of quaint English things and whatnot. So I thought it'd be kind of fun and nostalgic. And, I think I got to like the second or third movie, probably the third or the fourth movie before I went and read all the books. And I found the books entertaining. And same thing with the movie. My wife actually enjoyed them less than I did. She thought that it was kind of trite and trope and stuff, like a lot of boring and overused tropes in them. But I'm easily entertained. So I had a blast. But it was for me, like I'm a Xennial. So I was born in 1977. So I was like right at the very tail end of Gen Xers. So for my generation, Star Wars was like the defining thing. But I recognize that for millennials, Harry Potter was their generation, Star Wars. So it's not something I've like had like really strong feelings about, but I have a lot of friends who, it would be like if you know, I can't believe I forgot the creator of Star Wars' name.
George Lucas,
thank you. My nerd card is about to be revoked.
We don't gatekeep here. You're good.
Yeah, I'm like it's the guy with the flannels. What's his name? He's got the beard. But if he came out some sort of like raging homophobe or
bigot of some sort, with the flannels and the beard? Sorry.
Right.
That I know of. But if he were to do that, it would like devastate people, you know, and it'd be really hard to accept that. So I understand that even for me, it doesn't have the same emotional punch. It certainly does for a lot of people for whom it was really formative.
Right. And then there's also, I guess there must be an additional punch to that just simply from having, like, even if you didn't have a lot of those emotional ties to the Harry Potter universe, if you weren't a massive fan of that, this is still one of the best known, most famous people on the planet with the biggest, one of the biggest platforms that, that speaks to children and adults. I mean, to an entire generation, and is, you know, so widely known, just coming out and going this direction. It almost doesn't matter what she created. Just someone, I mean, it sucks when anyone does it, but especially somebody with that kind of platform. Does it feel like more, I guess more elevated, like more, it almost feels more intentional on her part, like more malicious, just because for someone to just say something, you know, make an offhanded comment at work, that's still, that sucks. But to go on Twitter to your 14 million followers and say it, I mean, that's like, that to me implies a certain level of malice. Like, there's intent there.
It's disgusting.
Yeah. It's, so last night I reread her essay because I wanted to have it fresh in my mind for what's that that's worth. And to be honest, if you were to read her essay on her website and like just read that in a vacuum, you're like, okay, here's a woman who has some past trauma. She clearly actually views men as predators and by default views men as dangerous. She doesn't completely disregard trans people because she says that she has a friend who's older than her who's trans. She says, I've never thought of this person as anything other than a woman. But then she proceeds to say, well, this trans person has been through all this therapy and all these other surgeries and all this other sort of thing. And then from there, she says, but these other people haven't. So she's like, you can be trans as long as you pass her purity test for being trans, which sort of lends itself to the whole, I view men as predators unless I've already decided that they're safe enough to be okay. I really feel like that informs a lot of her viewing. And she brings out a lot of stuff, about how the trans movement is harming girls and uses a lot of like really coded language to talk about that stuff. She cites incorrect studies. She cites scientifically agreed upon things like rapid onset gender dysphoria, which is like a made up thing that a Christian doctor came up with to basically say why lots of AFAB people become trans. Are you guys familiar with the terms AFAB and AMAB?
Mm-hmm. We are, but would you just explain in case someone not?
Yeah, so people, a lot of people don't like saying, you know, things like biologically male and biologically female and whatnot. So AMAB is assigned male at birth, and AFAB is assigned female at birth, because even a lot of intersex people don't fit either one, but they were assigned something at birth because the birth certificate only had two checkboxes. So it's sort of a term that kind of covers everything for everyone. And also, once a trans woman has been on, for example, has been on hormone therapy and has the hormones of a female and has female anatomy, at that point, you're like, are they biologically male still? Like, that gets kind of like a weird thing to say. So anyway, she sort of pulled up this card that the whole trans movement is harming young women, or who she perceives to be young women, even though they wouldn't call themselves that. And it really tries to like tug a lot of heartstrings and play like, oh, this is all just, you know, women being victimized by the patriarch. She kind of actually plays that card. And like I said, it was in a vacuum all by itself. It's like, okay, these are kind of like problematic views, and you know, they're not terrible. But to be honest, the view that trans people are only acceptable if they're trans enough is something that a lot of people hold. It's like, if you were to go in the street, a lot of people would be like, well, you know, you look great, Mal, because you look like a woman should. But this other person that, you know, maybe doesn't pass as well or something like that, well, I don't know about them. But they make these judgment calls. But they don't have, like you said, a massive platform that they're spewing this from.
Yeah, the coded language thing is kind of a really interesting and awful one, because she really does, because a lot of things she says starts out nicely, right? Like the tweet that she had, the initial tweet that made everybody go, wait a minute, what's going on here? She said something like, dress however you want to, call yourself whatever you would like, sleep with whoever will have you, but to throw someone out of their job for saying that sex is real. And then she did the whole I stand with Maya, that sort of thing. The sex is real part is seriously problematic. And prior to that, like, you read the other part, dress how you please, sleep with whom you want, you know, great, totally great. But then you get that and you realize what she's really saying is you're just not what I think is okay.
Right. That's her giving permission again.
Yeah.
Do what you want. Yep. Do this and do that. But it's the same, that whole type of language is the same thing that happens with people who are racial bigots. How many black people are in prison? well, you see what that means, without explaining redlining and systematic racism and all those types of things. It's the same thing.
Yeah, and then if a black person conforms with white society, dresses the right way, goes to right school, well, see, that's a good black person.
Oh, yeah, that's a good. That's one of the black good people ones. Aren't. Right. Yeah. Yeah. He's well spoken. Like right.
Yeah. Yeah. The language that people use. The language people use against trans people like that is the exact same language used against black people. Mm-hmm. It's the exact same language they used against women 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same thing people said to keep chattel slavery running and stuff like that. You know, it's the same language. The trans people are, I think the reason why trans is a big thing is we're like the last bastion, right. You know,
right.
We're like the smallest, most marginalized group. And if they can take us down, then they can start moving on everybody else again.
Right. Right.
But if we become accepted and okay in society, then, you know, then the bigots have nowhere to go at that point.
Yeah, right. You run out of people that you can, you know, that it's societally acceptable to keep under your...
It's for overweight people. Overweight people, unfortunately, are probably still punching bags for a while. But it's funny. I think that actually overweight people and marginalized people have really a lot in common.
Yeah.
Which is...
Yeah. That very much seems to be the case.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I'm curious about you were talking about the same language that has been used over and over again is now being directed toward trans people. What are there any of those that you still see being commonly used, like language that maybe some people don't recognize yet as being that type of language? Like, are there some that people maybe flippantly use or don't realize where it's coming from?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, the bathroom one is an obvious one. Like, people in some places are still up in arms about trans people using bathrooms, and I do recall them not wanting to share bathrooms with people of color in the past. You know,
that did
and that's it's like quite literally the exact same issue. Thing. Like,
right?
It's the exact and sports. They don't want trans people in sports. Didn't want black people in sports. You know, it's crazy actually. And didn't want women in sports. Women shouldn't have sports. You know, that's just terrible. Women are supposed to be like barefoot and pregnant. You know, and stuff like that. And it's. When you really look at the things that are happening, you're like, my God, we're just repeating this over and over again.
Yep.
It's kind of wild how it happens.
Right. It's one of those things where they, it's almost like a sprinkling powder on a shit sandwich. Right. So like they'll tell you, well, this happens and that happens and we stand with this person and we stand with that person. But those people over there, if they don't fit my mold, they're bad. They're horrible. They're one of the mm-hmm. they don't look, they don't pass. I mean, we talk about passing, right? Who mm-hmm. who had to deal with passing back in the day? People of color, people who had to do things to get by. If they looked bright, Dr. Charles Drew was one. He passed as white to get an education. The fact that we're doing the same things over and over again and it's not dawning on people is probably what concerns me the most, you know?
Yeah, I would agree with that. That it's just like, these are terrible patterns and they keep coming back. And passing applies to women too. Like, women in business are expected to behave like men. Absolutely. You know, and if they behave like a woman, they're too weak to be in business. You know, they can't handle it.
But there's no way to win once you set up structures like this. You can't be, you know, on one side, you know, I was recently there was a black woman on Facebook who was commenting on the fact that she's either can be perceived as weak and not asking for what she needs, or the moment she crosses the line into asking for what she needs, she's pushy or angry or like there's just no, there's absolutely no, there's nowhere to be. I mean, it reminds me of it's such a repetitive pattern, because you have the same thing with protests. Like, recently the people are saying, well, don't protest violently. And then they get up in arms when people kneel on the sideline of a football game and do it as peacefully as possible. There's nothing they will accept.
there's no right answer for them.
There's no way for you to be who you are in an acceptable enough manner for people like that.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question, man. At what point do you have to be, when you have that many Twitter followers, right, as Rawling has, at what point do you go, maybe what the fuck I'm doing is irresponsible? maybe because I know that there are trans people out there who read those books and were inspired to be themselves. Mm-hmm. At what point do you go, I really need to just shut my mouth and allow these things to be?
Yeah, I mean, It's like being either really narcissistic or tone deaf or something, because like everybody that she's worked with on the Harry Potter movies has come out like not being mean to her, but basically saying, I do not stand with this bullshit. You know, like everyone has come out. There's like people who won't do business with her anymore, all sorts of things. And I think that, to be honest, the reason why she's probably still where she is because she's using her victimhood from things that have clearly happened to her as a weapon against other people. And so she's like, well, this is just more people attacking me, like the things that happened that caused me to feel this way in the first place. So I'm a victim and I'm being attacked, and she'll circle the wagons. I mean, I would have thought at this point that she would have said, my bad. This is something that I just, you know, I might have certain feelings about this matter, but clearly I shouldn't be talking about this. Right. But she just keeps doubling down. And at this point, you're just like, are you so disconnected from reality that you can't see what's going on? You know, it's crazy. I mean, I just think some people really, I mean, there's actually studies coming out about this now, but some people literally lack the mental capacity. There's parts of their brains that just aren't there to self-introspect. And I think that might be her situation. I mean, look at the house elves in Harry Potter. Those are probably worse than any of the trans stuff she's ever done, because they're slaves and they like being slaves. Like, I recall that being said in the past too.
Yeah.
You know, that has some pretty disgusting historical context. So, you know,
Dobby bothered the hell out of me.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah.
It was like,
what?
And at the very end of it, house elves are still slaves. Like, that is not resolved.
Yeah. Only one got out and one got free. And it's like, okay, you're going to have a great life now, thanks to the savior who happened to give you a sock. And it happens to be white. It's amazing.
Well, it is, and then amazing. He dies.
And then he dies.
Right. So like, it's, they can't even enjoy it.
No.
She reminds me almost of young white, like 20-year-old dudes who get sort of drug into these, sort of the militias or into white supremacy, just sort of any, looking for some sort of identity, which is a thing we mostly do in our 20s, but being online has made it easy to get radicalized. And it seems almost like she's been pulled into this, the radical feminist, but the turf side of radical feminism. So
rad fems, I actually agree with a lot of rad fem philosophy. I don't have a problem with them. It's funny because she actually refers to turfs as a slur that the trans activists came up with. Trans exclusionary radical feminism is a term they came up with for themselves. Yeah. And then when it got used against them, they came up with gender critical. But just like I'm not going to call racists race realists, I'm not going to call gender critical people that. I'm going to call them TERFs, what they are, you know? Yeah,
no, that's just intentionally misdirectional euphemism.
Totally, yeah. Like, this is your own shitty name that you made up for yourselves. We're going to use it.
And it kind of says it more accurately and succinctly than anything else that I've heard, too. I mean, describes their philosophy in four words, pretty much. One thing that really bothers me about how she's about, like what Rob said about having that kind of platform, is like just not really seeming to have any self-awareness that if I put this out there, who could this harm? You know, like these millions of people listening to me. That requires an elevated level of care in what you say, especially if you're going to be specifically attacking a group of people who are typically marginalized and threatened and in more physical danger than other groups a lot of the time. Like, if that's the case, you really got to think twice and be extra careful. And it seems like she didn't do that and has also made no effort to educate herself on the things that she's wrong about, the philosophy or the science of it.
Yeah, just the punching down that much is just like, why? Like, clearly she has an issue with men. She was in an abusive relationship that she said she was in and took her time to get out of. Well, who's the number? If you're worried about people abusing, you know, women, it's cis men who are the ones who do this. Like, it's not trans people. I mean, yes, there are bad trans people out there. Like any group of people, there are bad actors in every group, but she's worried about, you know, like, I mean, not to be too fine a point on, but most trans women, even if they still have a penis, it's not functional. You can't do bad things with it. It doesn't work. And most trans people have like zero libido because hormone replacement therapy completely removes your libido. You're almost completely asexual. Eventually it can come back for some people, but for a lot of people it doesn't. So we're like super chill asexual people who really just most trans people, they just want cuddles. That's like all they want.
That and to use the bathroom wherever the hell they want.
Yeah, use your bathroom. Like we're actually like physiologically not aggressive people.
Yeah.
So it's like out of all the people to pick on, you know. But then of course they say, well, now any man can put on a dress and go into a women's bathroom. It's like that's always been true.
That's already the case.
Always.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing like it's a room with a non-locking door without an exit. It's never been a safe place.
It's logical fallacies for them, though. It's logical fallacy salad all day.
Oh, so much. And her, that's, I was going to mention, like when she, in her essay where she was talking about you have rights of women and girls from being eroded, it's like, it's not an either or situation here. You know, it's not a zero sum game, you know. It's like that t-shirt where it's got like, it says, more rights for me doesn't mean less rights for you. You know, it's not pie.
Right. Exactly. You know? It reminded me, I was thinking earlier today about how this reminds me of the debate over gay marriage when that was going on, that it's people saying, well, we can't let them get married because then that's somehow like no one could ever explain how that in any way affected straight marriages. Like it's there.
Well, because yeah, you're right. Yeah, it didn't take. Yeah, but very shortly we would all start marrying goats. That was that's what's going to happen next.
There's always the slippery slope.
Yeah.
Yep. The slippery slope argument. But then also just the. I mean, if you have to enjoy something, if you have to deny it to somebody else, then I think that requires taking a pretty deep look at yourself. And
yeah,
Rowling takes this approach like. That it's somehow giving rights to trans women is normally who she's talking about in particular. I assume she means all trans people. But in order, like if that happens, then it somehow threatens womanhood or no one could point to exactly like, what is the threat? What is the problem? Like you don't need to exclude other people from it in order to have it yourself. I don't get it.
She's completely wrong about some of her stuff. Like one of the things about an arms was that was referring to menstruators, which is kind of like a gross way to describe stuff, but it was speaking specifically about people who need menstrual products. Right. And so the word, you know, saying menstruators, even though it's kind of like, it was referring to women. One of the groups of people was women who have periods, and the other group of people was trans people who have periods. And it's excluding people like me who don't menstruate, and it's excluding younger and older, you know, women who don't menstruate. Like it wasn't actually an anti-woman thing at all. It was actually supportive of women who accepted this issue and also supportive of trans men. It's like the one group of people not in that Venn diagram were trans women. You know, we were, well, plus and like cishet men or cis men. Like we were so far out of this diagram, and but we're the ones she attacked. It's like you don't even understand what you're talking about. At this point, it's kind of ridiculous.
It is oddly laser focused on trans women. Like she doesn't seem to care at all about trans men. That's perfectly like just whatever. But trans women,
she does insofar as she believes the trans activism movement is harming, in her words, young girls.
Yeah,
right. Who want to transition. So she pulls out the we have to protect the children card.
Right.
You know,
the lowest common thing you can do.
It's what they're all doing, though.
It's the easiest thing to turn to, right?
They're skating Black Lives Matter with, if you care about this, you should care about children activists. Like, I'm actually an activist. Not only an activist, I'm also an advocate. I can tell you where to go. I know the numbers. I know the places to go to help children. Do you want to do that? No, you want to sit behind your keyboard and get angry about something that you don't even really care about. It's not really even affecting you.
Like,
you just want to complain about it.
I can care about and do things about more than one thing.
It's not a struggle race. Yeah. We're all on the struggle bus. I got beat up. No, I got beat up worse because the person kicked me once. No, we both got beat up and we both need to help each other out and prevent that from happening on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
It does seem like she's got it. Like it is, that was a good way to put it, Ellie, laser focused. And there's just a lot of vitriol there, and her blog post, especially, that, you know, that's the time that she's written about it at length. It just reeks of confirmation bias. Like all of her arguments are just, it's, you could almost see her blocking out this entire side of logic and evidence and just having blinders on and saying, no, I like this argument and I like this study, but it was discredited. No, I don't want to hear that. You know, it's really,
it's like a game of snakes and ladders of like the things that support her, like this, like this slice of truth. It's like, I mean, to like jump all over the place. Well, like this, we should talk about her name that she chose, Robert right. Albright. Right. Like because that ties into, like you said, it's like laser focus. It's like she's got a bone to pick. Yeah.
Yes, this one was fascinating to me because, and it's only fair to say that she has denied this connection through a spokesperson. The name that she writes this detective series under, is Robert Galbraith, which is immediately evocative of, if you know the name, Robert Galbraith Heath, who was a scientist later very much discredited for performing extremely cruel and unethical experiments on people. He was a proponent of conversion therapy. These are the things he was known for. And my take is, yes, it's fair to say that she did deny the connection there, but J.K. Rowling and names, the way that names were handled in Harry Potter, with everything having a hidden meaning and all that, it's super unlikely, in my opinion. I mean, it just, that doesn't pass the smell test at all.
No, it doesn't.
That was an accident? Really?
Come on.
And Robert Galbraith actually didn't just was a supporter of gay conversion therapy. Well, that's basically electroshock therapy to make someone not gay. He came up with it. And that version of electroshock therapy that he did was drilling holes in the skull and putting electrodes into the brain to people who did not consent to this. Like, he was a like, when you read about, like, when you have nightmares thinking about, if I was trapped in an insane asylum and they did terrible things to me, he's the guy.
That's the person.
He's like this disgusting, immoral person. And that's the person she chose. And I don't, like, there's no other Robert Galbraith. Like,
The explanation that I think her spokesperson gave was that it was a combination of Robert Kennedy, who was a hero of hers, and name Ella Galbraith, who doesn't refer to anyone. It's just a name that she's always liked. Okay. So that, all right, that's what they said. And that to me sounds like they couldn't even be bothered to come up with a reasonable fake explanation. Like, they just gave up halfway through and were like, Robert Kennedy and
some other fucking person.
You're telling me the woman who researches everything, like all of her spells, all of her names, they all have references. She didn't Google it. Like,
yeah. Listen.
No.
Can I give you a hot take? Just 1 second. It's bullshit. We know it's bullshit. For her publicist to even, I would have just quit if I was her publicist, because there's no fucking way anybody's gonna believe any of that bullshit. What? Like, what? You did what? It was your what? You like that name? What's the person's middle name? Pronounce that.
Which person's middle name? The
doctor.
I would say Galbraith. Does that sound about
Galbraith? Right?
Robert Galbraith Heath.
Where the name. Fuck would that name just come up from anybody's brain? That's like Klingon. You can't, like, I mean, seriously.
Well, she is British, so I don't think it's necessarily hugely uncommon, but to say that her, you know, favorite childhood name was Ella Galbraith is...
I'm going to pucker my lips and just look at the camera like, come on, dog.
Yeah, there's a lot of bullshit in that one. That's, and of course, at this point, it's such a pattern. It's like,
Exactly. If it had been a doctor doing anything else, we might have all been like, oh, well, okay, sure. But
for might as well be wretched.
Be it.
Yeah. Yeah, might as well be Dr. Yeah. Wretched. I mean, we're going to be real here. I mean, come on.
Yeah. You're right. Like, if it had been a doctor who did something good, or at least, like, wasn't specifically known for this one awful thing, like that. And she's got a team of people. I mean, marketing people, people at the publishing house, everywhere. That, I mean, I can only, this is pure speculation, but it's hard for me to imagine that getting through without somebody Googling it and saying, wait, that's a really bad look. And her pushing for it and saying, no, that's the name I want, despite that. I'm completely imagining that in my own head, but I wouldn't be surprised at all to find out that she was like, nope, this is the one I want. Just, you know, yeah.
They lost years of life trying to spin that. They lost years of life and drank a lot. They probably have cirrhosis of the liver trying to figure out a way to spin this and continue to make money, because how disrespectful to Robert Kennedy and how disrespectful to the team of people, which I'm, if we go by numbers here, if we go by numbers, I'm sure she has someone on her staff who is transgender.
Probably, yeah.
If we go by numbers, and probably someone who doesn't talk about it.
Right.
Certainly not anymore.
Well, especially not exactly. anymore, because they want to keep their job.
Yeah.
I mean, at what point do you go, I need to shut the hell up and keep making money? Even if we're there, even if we're at that point. I need to have my thoughts private and just keep making this money. Because if I was anybody who owned any, my kids are not watching the films. They don't even, my oldest son never finished the books, because I had to explain to him that the person who wrote those books was a bigot. And yeah. I cannot allow, we don't ride with bigots in this house, no matter what.
That brings up an important question too, which is like, that's what a lot of people are grappling with, especially having grown up with this stuff being an important part of their childhood or even their adulthood. You know, what do you do with that stuff? I know that some people are beginning to distance themselves from her. A lot of people, follower accounts going down. I've unfollowed. I actually got a message from a trans friend of mine who said, politely asked me, like, hey, you're probably accidentally still following JK Rowling. I was like, shit, you're right. That is an accident. In fact, bye-bye. And there was a reason, there was a game that came out recently where the studio said that they specifically made a statement that Rowling is not directly involved with the project. Like, that's starting to need to happen. And it is starting to happen. People are starting to push away from it. I mean, she's going to be sitting on a pile of $1 billion for the rest of her life anyway, so she's fine. But I'm just trying to figure out, like, a lot of people are trying to figure out how to continue to engage with this stuff. Like, we're back at that separating the art from the artist kind of situation again, which is never easy.
And you can't totally do it. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's possible. Like, you might be willing to ignore, you have to accept with everybody that, like, between the four of us, there's probably things that we don't agree on. And some of them might be fairly important things to us that we don't agree on. But they're not so big that they're all we can see when we look at the person, right? You know? And so I kind of feel like Orson Scott Card's another great example of kind of a terrible person.
Yeah.
And what, you know, at first I was like, I love his books so much. They mean so much to me. Ender's Game was, you know, for me, what I read that sort of age, a lot of younger people read Harry Potter. And for the longest time, I was like, no, I can separate the art from the artist. I hit a point where I just can't. I'm like, this guy is just, I'm giving him money and he's using it for bad things. I can't do that anymore, you know? And it hit the point, like I said, where when you talk about Orson Scott Card, all that you could think about was the fact that this guy is a douche to women, you know? And it's the same thing for JK Rowling now too, because she just won't shut up about it. Like if Orson Scott Card had like been douchey a couple of times and then kind of shut up about it and was just douchey on his own time, you know, that'd be one thing, but he's
determined.
determined to be publicly douchey as much as possible. And so is she. At that point, you're like, okay, you know, there's just no way that I could, in any good conscience, you know, continue. And I feel like with people like that, it's at the point where, like, I don't know if I want to associate with people who can turn a blind eye to this sort of behavior as well. And I really feel like we're at that point. And I don't think there's like a blanket rule you can apply. I just think it's subjective with everybody, but there just comes a point when the controversy around them becomes bigger than them. You're like, there's just no way.
Well, yeah. I think it's kind of, so I'm also a Xennial. I was born in 77, and I don't know why I got so into, high five, why I got so far into the Harry Potter stuff, but I did. I am a huge Harry Potter fan. I love all things, you know, in the universe. I liked deconstructing the spells and teaching my children language around them. And I mean, we did parties based on it and cosplays based on it. I mean, we were all in.
Yeah. Waterheads for sure.
I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. And then this has been happening. And I have hit that point where things that I looked at with joy and for me, the books all were about inclusion in a lot of ways. Like, so I was able, I suppose, or I just was dumb enough to not catch all of the bad stuff in the background. And so I'm looking at the foreground stuff of the fighting against the bad and the including people and all of that stuff and not seeing the terrible things. But this happens, yeah. And I'm like, okay, no. And so I'm done. Like, I can't keep, and it's heartbreaking, right? To have something that you love and then you look at it and you're like, it just makes me sad now.
Absolutely. I mean, some of our best actors and directors, just like Roman Polanski broke my heart. Kevin Spacey broke my heart completely. Yeah. He shattered my heart into pieces. That's where we are now. We have to make sure that our heroes are on the up and up. And if they're not, we have to understand that they're people, right?
Yeah.
Understand that they're people, and people have opinions and they feel a certain way about things.
Some of them are going to suck.
And some of them are going to suck. You know, absolutely. There are athletes who are anti-LGBTQ. There are, you know, there are people who are out there, family members. You have to think about that. You have to think about your family members, and some of them are not agree. Well, like Mallory said, some of them don't agree with what you say, and you can kind of find a common ground. But at some point, you have to, as a human being, you know, draw a line.
Yep.
And when they continue to be shitty people, we have to draw the line and say, well, no, we're not supporting you anymore. We're not giving you any money, and our kids definitely won't learn anything about this. Hopefully you're a footnote in history, because you haven't deserved anything more than that.
Yeah.
You destroyed a lot of people's lives, really, like took their hearts from them.
Yeah. And not only the people that she's targeting directly, but yeah, like you said, the people who also, you know, the way I look at it is you can't take away the enjoyment that people had in the past before they knew about this and before this happened. You did get to enjoy that. You took something from it, and that'll never change. That's in the past. You don't need to go back and convince yourself that you didn't enjoy it, because that's impossible to do. But I didn't know. There's a lot that I didn't notice. I'm coming from a very privileged position. I very much acknowledge that, being a cis het white guy. I didn't notice a lot of that stuff. It didn't stand out to me when I read those books when I was younger. I see it now, and it's like I'm less interested in. I'm not going to go back and reread them. I'm not going to watch the movies. The main thing to me is don't continue to give people like this money. Don't continue to support them. Don't continue to give them, signal boosts or anything like that. Like, if we're talking about it now, this is not positive publicity for J.K. Rowling. Episode is not going to be something that she's going to, you know, put out there in the. That's not going to be part of her sizzle reel. there's no way to go back to it from to before and change what happened. But now I don't see how, and that's coming from that privileged position that I'm in. That's kind of the way that I'm having to look at it, is that it's not about what I got out of this stuff or what I could continue to get out of it. It's like you said, Mallory, that there are people who are very negatively affected by some things in the stories themselves, as well as by things the creator's doing. They're not targeted at me specifically, but for me to turn a blind eye to those, and for me to, you know, I can't take the stance that, well, they're not targeted at me, so why should I be upset, or why should I care because of everybody else on here right now and everybody else in the world. That's I can't support it, because then what does that say about that? Says I don't care about you, honestly. That's
that's kind of what it gets to a certain point, where you have to look at people and say, like, by supporting person XYZ, it means you don't care about all those other people, because you can't. There are some situations where you can't do both, you know, and that becomes one of them. Which you were mentioning as well about being, you know, being cishet and white and whatnot, but now understanding that other people have it harder is like a great thing for you, because I used to live play life on easy mode. I looked like a white dude. I had blonde hair and blue eyes. You know, I was smart and successful. And when I walked up to a door and knocked, it opened. And you sort of just think, oh, well, that must happen to everybody. And if other people aren't doing well, it must just because they're not knocking on the right doors, and they're not doing the things that I do. But then when I came out, I realized, oh, I was completely wrong. There are lots of doors that are closed, and there are things that instantly change, you know. And there's funny things too, like the very first time I ever got mansplained to me, I'm like, this is affirming and terrible all at the same time. It was pretty funny.
It must have been a really confusing moment. Like, how do you react to that?
And it still happens with misogyny. It's like, hey, this random dude's being misogynistic to me. I guess I pass. Yay. And also, it sucks. But what I learned was, my biggest takeaway, I think, out of everything coming out as trans is that if someone who is, someone claims to be marginalized and claims that certain things are hard for them, believe them. Because there probably are. Because life is really freaking hard. Like, and so J.K. Rowling, having survived abuse, having been a woman, you know, which makes life harder by default, why doesn't she turn around and show the same empathy to other people that she should expect? And she should, you know, it's one thing for, I mean, I'm not giving a pass to any cis white dude, but, you know, they don't understand personally some of the things that happen when you're marginalized. And I can't blame them for that. It's just the way the world is. They didn't ask to be that any more than I asked to be what I am. But for someone in her shoes, she does know what it's like to be marginalized. She does know what it's like to have other people put her down and make life difficult and abuse her and stuff like that. So for her to turn around, this is one of my cardinal sins for people. For someone to turn around and repeatedly weaponize their own abuse against other people is disgusting.
It is.
And especially like you're saying before, Rob, like when everybody's telling her to stop, she still does it. Like she doesn't get it. It's moved into the realm of unforgivable at this point.
Right. It's super villain level shit.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It really is.
It's especially sad because, like you're saying, she could be doing so much good. You know, she could be having. It's such a huge swing between what she's doing and what she could be doing on the negative to positive scale. I mean, just take a step back and think and quit being an asshole.
She could do a whole lot of good by just shutting up. I mean, to be honest, she could just sit down and be quiet, and that would be really helpful. It's kind of a weird one too, because trans women have such an interesting point of view, like you were saying. So you have experienced both sides of this thing. You have a point of view that most people cannot give, and that actually could easily, happily advance any sort of feminism and equality. So yeah, why not?
I feel like that.
Yeah.
Because trans people validate so much of what feminists and people seeking equality have said. We're like, we can clearly see that life is different on other sides of the fences. We've personally experienced it. And here's all the evidence for how we're treated different ways and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, like there's nothing more, more real than standing in front of two bathroom doors and being kind of terrified to go in both of them.
Yeah.
You know, like one could, because all it takes really for me is one unscrupulous person in a women's bathroom to cry rape. Right. And my life becomes immeasurably more difficult than it currently is. You know, to decide between that possibility or getting the shit kicked out of me.
Yep.
You know, like, and luckily I'm lucky that I pass really well. Not all trans people do, you know, not all trans people have a body or a face or as good at makeup as I am, you know. Not everybody can pass well. And that's sort of like very few people are that low on the totem pole that they're worried about the shit getting kicked out of them for using the bathroom. I'm not saying that we have it the worst. I think there are people who actually have it in certain situations. I'm really lucky that I live in Massachusetts, which is like a super LGBT friendly state. And Massachusetts is sort of overlooked, but it's like one of the most liberal, progressive and functional states in the union. First place in the world to abolish slavery. First place in the world to allow for gay marriage.
Remember that.
You know, it's we got some good. We were also the first state in the union to legalize slavery. So there's certainly not
the other side of that, right?
Yeah, but you know, I still am very privileged, is what I want to say by all that. I'm still white. You know, I kind of look like a hot MILF sometimes, so that helps. I live in a great place and my life has become significantly more difficult. So I can only imagine how hard it is for some people. And that's what I was saying. I think we talked about this before the show started, is why is she picking on this group of people who already have it so hard? What trauma is in her past? This is pure speculation, but you almost wonder, and she kind of in a way almost alluded to this, is like, is she trans? and having this reaction to it? Mm-hmm. Or was her first husband trans? Or did she have like a some trans person in her life that like betrayed her in some way? Because it's so like we're so laser focused on trans people. It's just like this is like bizarre at this point.
It really is, yeah.
And it's sad, but also she's a grown woman with all of the world's resources at her fingertips, and therapy is easy to come by, especially if you have that much money.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah.
And shutting the hell up is free.
Right.
Costs nothing. Costs absolutely nothing.
Exactly, yeah. Are you guys aware of sort of the difference between trans acceptance in the United States versus the UK, though? The UK is very LGB friendly and not very T friendly, to the point where like even their more progressive papers like the Telegraph publish transphobic articles fairly regularly. There's an organization called Stonewall, which exists in both the United States and the UK. And in the UK, people still didn't like the fact that Stonewall was advocating for trans people as well. So they formed the LGB Alliance. And they spend most of their time and energy advocating against trans people to the British government. Not advocating for LGB issues, just against trans people. Like they had like this session with this one group of ministers and maybe even the prime minister in the UK. And every single question that they asked when they could have like talked about anything was all, how are you going to stop trans people from having all the rights that they want to have? You know, so it's
a weird and bullshit way to focus your energy.
It is. And I was talking with some friends about that today. We were talking about trying to understand that. And one of the theories is that it's a class issue. The UK is much more class focused than the US is. And being a woman is a step down. So it's got like sort of this social stigma in choosing to be a woman over being a man. It exists in the States a little bit, but it's not as strong. And the other thing is that they don't have, their left and right isn't broken up the same way that ours is because they have more parties. And for them, Labor did not side with the liberals. Whereas the United States, the Labor parties and the liberal parties, our social liberal parties are very lockstep, mainly because of the religion wedge that exists in American politics, where religion basically creates this division that stuff falls on either side of. They don't have that same religious impetus. So some of their party politics line up differently. But the long story short, they put trans people on the media a lot, and they're really hard on them. Like their major networks and stuff like that, they'll constantly bring trans people on and talk about these issues, and then they're just brutal to them. And trans healthcare in the UK is almost impossible to get. If you want to get on hormones, you're on a 2-year waiting list before you can even see someone. So the UK in this particular regard is a pretty damn backwards country.
Dear Lord, don't tell the U.S. Healthcare people, because then they will all want us to go on U.S. health or national healthcare.
Right.
Sorry. Yeah. Crazy religious people.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I think she feels safer to be the way she is in the U.K. as a result, because it's more acceptable to be anti-trans there than it is here in the States.
Well, we hope that changes, because it's still way too acceptable here. And I don't know. It's all about, you know, keeping on trying to push the needle in the right direction, right? Like one way to do that, I wanted to ask you this before we forget, is in addition to your books, do you have any authors that you'd recommend people read perhaps instead of J.K. Rowling? Whose books should they go buy? Yours, of course. Make sure everybody goes and buys some of Mallory's books.
You know, I think I would, I'm trying to think of who I would really recommend. I'm sort of well known in the author community because I've done a lot of help training authors on how to market books, and I do a lot of con circuits on that sort of thing. And since I came out, there's a segment of authors who no longer speak with me, and the majority of them are the authors who write the same stuff that I write, which is mostly military science fiction. So a lot of my favorite authors I can't recommend anymore. Which is kind of unfortunate.
Yeah. I was thinking trans authors in response to the J.K. Rowling.
One of my favorite, great friend of mine is Dharma Keller, and she's trans and she writes thrillers, which is actually in the same vein as Robert Galbraith. So instead of reading the books that J.K. Rowling publishes under Robert Galbraith, I would recommend reading Dharma Keller. She's fantastic, writes great books.
We'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah. People can find her. And I think also, like, if you wanted to read like really good science fiction or fantasy, I would look for authors who publish outside of the norms. There are amazing sci-fi authors out of Australia who write really interesting sci-fi that I'm trying to peer over. Just give you one quick second.
Sure. You're fine.
While you're doing that, I can recommend a couple. One of my favorite authors is Charlie Jane Anders. Writes really, really wonderful science fiction and fantasy. Huge fan of Charlie Jane. Also, I was thinking also of if you're replacing Rowling's books with something else, if you're reading science fiction and fantasy books that have good trans representation, including Blackfish City by Sam J. Miller. I thought that was a really good one. There are places to go. If you don't feel like you don't have books to read just because Rowling has decided to do what she's doing, there's plenty more. So what did you just find?
Marianne Dupree is a really author I really like. So it's Marianne Dupree. The French spelling of it is like P-R-I-E-S-S-E. She's an Australian author. I love her books. And her books are very much about transforming your body and having a body that's not exactly one that you might want, which I think sort of speaks to trans people a lot. And another author that I really like is Vonda N. McInter. She wrote a lot of great science fiction back in the day. She was actually one of the writers on Star Trek, the original Star Trek. She wrote the book version of Wrath of Khan and some other things like that. So she's got some great books where she explores a lot of people changing species, people changing their bodies to better fit themselves and stuff like that. So I think that might be something that folks might really enjoy as well, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Okay. We always put links in our show notes. So we'll definitely have links to your books as well as all the ones you just mentioned. So we like to leave people. If we're going to tell you, if we're going to tell folks don't keep supporting J.K. Rowling, then we'll give you something to go and actually throw your support behind. So those are good recommendations. Well, did you have anything else, any other comments you wanted to get out there while you got the chance about the Rowling debacle, recommendations you'd give to folks or anything?
I'm just trying to think. I had notes. I'm curious if we covered everything. Yeah, we talked about all of her logical fallacies that she has. I think
they are numerous.
We talked a little bit about how people who speak like, say things she says, they use coded language. and there are certain things they say that sound okay at first, but the more you deconstruct them, the less they do. And you'll hear this, when people talk about the Black Lives Matter movement as well, they'll say things at first that sound okay. And you're like, wait a second, that's just your way of like dismissing this whole topic. One of the things that you think at first is okay, but you realize afterwards is terrible is people say things like a man who identifies as a woman. She uses that language a lot. Mm-hmm. Now, trans people are women. We're not men who identify as women. We had to hide and pretend we were men for a lot of our lives because society wouldn't let us be what we are, but we've never been men. And just like saying that identifies as is just a way of dismissing it a little bit and saying like, you identify as XYZ. I don't identify you as XYZ. And even things like where she says like, wear what you want, sleep with who will have you. Like that's actually kind of coded in a way. Like I can't imagine who would have you, but sure, I guess if someone does, sleep with them, gross. A nice way of saying that is like go out and find real love. Like that'd be a great way of saying that. But no, she's like talking specifically about who will have you. And like the whole, even the saying, I know I have friends who say this and I don't think they mean any ill by it, but even saying like you do you is always a way of like separating yourself and saying like, you can do that thing. It's just not for me.
Right.
You know, versus saying, I really accept you. And so when people start using a lot of that language, it really can kind of give you hints about what they're really thinking. Now, they might not be actively bigoted. They just might not have really thought about this stuff before, but it'll kind of tell you where they are, where they say, well, you identify that way. Or they call being trans a lifestyle. I'm like, if anyone chose this as a lifestyle, they should have their head examined. No, it's not a lifestyle. Me wearing cat suits is a lifestyle. You know, being trans is not a lifestyle. It's just what I am.
Yes. And we did that one, since that hasn't come up yet. Awesome cat suits. Valerie does have one of the greatest collections. But yeah, that language, though, like
you're saying. You have 100 now.
You have 100.
Wow. Yeah. You need to do a closet tour of some time where you let people see your collections of cats.
I should totally do that. It's a little bit messy right now. Although my closet is an entire room at this point.
And see, don't you have, like, that. You have some meta cat suit cosplay? Like, don't you have, was it Catwoman cosplaying as Spider-Gwen? What's the
setup? No, I did Dead. So there's actually a whole thing of Deadpool cosplaying as other people. So right. I did Deadpool cosplaying as Spider-Gwen, which is a fun one to do. And I like doing cosplays that mix things. So if anyone plays Overwatch, I've done a D.Va Bastion cosplay because she like rides around in a mech. So I'm like, what if she was the mech? You know, I had Bastion's gun arm on her and stuff like that. I like doing stuff like that. I'm going to be doing cosplay I'm working on next is Pinkie Pie from My Little Pony cosplaying as Deadpool.
Yes.
That's actually like a thing. Like it's called Pinkie Pool. So it's like, you like, awesome. It's like you have like a My Little Pony head. With the rest of you just as normal, and then you have like the pink mane coming out the back of the mask and stuff like that, you know, and the tail and everything. So, I like doing fun stuff like that, like mixing things up. I think maybe it comes from being trans, but I think a lot of things come from being trans. Like once you sort of like do the thing that you're not supposed to do, which is identify as the other gender, you're kind of like, I've done like the hardest thing there is. Y'all wear cat suits in public, you know, like I wore a latex dress yesterday to pick up my daughter from school. And then we went to the convenience store while I was wearing that, you know, like, you're just like not afraid to do difficult things like that anymore. Cause you just sort of decide like, I already don't give a crap what society thinks because half of them think I'm terrible. So I might as well slip and really own that.
Right. It's like, unfortunately you're going to be stuck with a bunch of them being terrible. I appreciate those notes on language though. That's really helpful because that you point out a couple of those things like saying you do you and that sort of stuff, which is not, it's not like inherently negative, but it sounds like what you're saying is that it implies a level of separation. It definitely precludes support. Like it doesn't sound supportive in the least. And it implies
you could say like, I love, you could say instead like, I love that you're finding yourself.
Right.
That's a great way of saying the same sort of thing versus you do you, you know, that's your thing. You do that, you know? So, and the way people like phrase those sentiments can tell you a lot about where they're at. And like, I guess I should really say, I think there's hope for her. There's hope for other bigots. I used to be like right-wing evangelical in the tank. I grew up, you know, in a place that was so white, I didn't know people had other skin colors until I was 10 years old, you know? And I grew up evangelical, you know, where there's like jokes like, you know, why don't evangelical people have sex standing up? They're afraid it might lead to dancing, you know? Like, so I grew up like, and I'm autistic. So I see the entire world black and white as well. So I was like, there's one way to do things and everything else is wrong and sinful and evil. And I've completely come around on like pretty much every issue I used to believe in. So I have hope that people can learn and they can better themselves and they can improve. Cause I feel like as a world and more, especially for those of us living in the United States right now, as a country, we have to figure out how to live together. And to do that, you know, and maybe we can't forgive everyone for everything that they've ever done. Like, I don't know for sure that I could forgive J.K. Rowling completely. She'd have to like build up a decade or two of good behavior to really believe it's for real. But we at least have to learn how to like, okay, we have to coexist in some fashion. So I have to remember that people can change and give them the opportunity to change and try and find common ground because the alternative is not good. The alternative is worse than now. Yeah. So we do. And there's some people some people I think about as I'm saying them, like, I can't imagine what common ground I could ever have with these people and how they could ever come around. But so I'm not saying that like the hope that we can all come together means that we have to behave like we already are.
Right.
Right.
But we can try to think about how can we move in ways to bring people together. And I really feel like exposing people to different points of view, to different people, showing them that we're all humans. You know, at the end of the day, everybody wants the same thing. We want security for the future. That's like the number one drive for human beings. And when we feel like something threatens our security for the future, we get it up in arms. We just have to say like, hey, you know, black people not being shot by cops doesn't harm your future security. You know, trans people existing and going pee doesn't harm your future security. And the best way to do that is by meeting people who are different, talking with them, learning that they're humans. I grew up in Canada, you know, as I mentioned, where Americans were vilified on the regular. You grew up thinking Americans might as well have horns coming out of their heads. They were the worst things you'd ever seen. They were evil. They were demonic. They were immoral. They loved guns and making wars and killing people. And then the internet came around and I started meeting Americans. I'm like, they're just people. They're people like me. They want the same things. I've traveled the globe a bit and everywhere I go, I'm like, people are people, you know? We might have some different views on certain things, but you know, the vast majority of people are, I actually think, are decent. You know, civilization functions. Like the lights turn on when I hit the switch, when I flush the toilet, stuff goes somewhere that I don't have to worry about. The roads are still there. That all happens because we have learned how to work together. And we have learned that we can like take small differences. And if we have them, we just don't talk about them. You just shut the fuck up, J.K. Rowling. You know, let's focus on continue to build civilization. We've done it in so many ways. Let's just keep doing it. You know, let's keep making the world better. Because as crazy as it sounds, barring COVID, this is the best the world has ever been right now. It's never been better than it is now. So it's like on us not to screw it up, you know, to keep getting better.
Love that positive attitude. My little soapbox. I also think that that's a great attitude to come at it with. That's actually reminding me to have a more, you know, more positive outlook. Like, yeah, you don't know if people are going to get better, but let's hope they can and try to help them get there. Yeah. And also, I think you might have hit on the perfect title for the episode. Just yep. Shut the fuck up.
Shut the fuck up, J.K.
Ooh, I'm excited.
That's a t-shirt.
I was going to say, that's a t-shirt, Mal. Oh, definitely.
That's got all.
What did I say? It was a t-shirt. I don't even know what it was.
You said, shut the fuck up, J.K. Rowling. So you should just do like a STFU-JKR.
Yes.
Perfect. I was going to say, from an optimism standpoint, Jesse, you go in the direction you're pointed. Mm. So people should think about that when they, you know, think about good things, think about positive things, try and find positive things, figure out a way to turn negative things into positive things. Because if you only focus on negative things, you go in the direction you're pointed. So try and point in a good direction and then trust people live up or live down to your expectations. Mm-hmm. So I have high expectations for everybody else. Like people are going to behave well. They're going to do smart things. They're going to be good. They're going to care about other people. And they will, to a certain extent, at least they will more than if you tell them they're all shit, right. You know, yeah. To predict their rowling, we'll make the t-shirt, you know?
But and then after she's done, after she finally shuts up, and she apologizes, we'll burn the shirts.
We'll make new ones to say, thank you for shutting the fuck up.
Thank you for shutting the fuck up, J.K. Rowling.
TY4. S-T.
We don't even really have to change the design. Just add the TY4.
Yeah, you just move it down a little.
Just put that on with a Sharpie. That's a great attitude to come at it with. Mallory, we really appreciate you coming on. Thank you for being here and talking about this with us. Where can people find you? Where do they find your books? Where do they find you online? All that stuff.
Sure. So I write under MD Cooper, as you mentioned at the beginning. All of my books are available on Amazon. Eventually I'll get them in other places, but right now I promised my Kindle Unlimited readers that they'll be able to read all my books for now on there. And the Amazon, of course, doesn't let you publish them everywhere if you choose Kindle Unlimited. So search for MD Cooper. All of my books take place in one universe called Aeon 14. So all 103 books are in the same universe. My goal is actually to have the largest, most internally consistent science fiction universe ever created. Aim small.
Let's go for it.
So if you want to like completely lose yourself in a series, it's going to take you like the better part of a year to read. There's like 8 million words. It's about 10 times longer than the Bible all told at this point.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a big series. So if you really like that sort of thing, you want to lose yourself in it, look it up. A great book to start with, if you like military science fiction, is called OutSystem. Because when you have 102 books, you have to tell people where to start. Another great book, if you like swashbuckling pirates, a lot of really interesting social and gender stuff, is a book called Destiny Lost. I write about a future where there's no LGBT doesn't exist because no one gives a shit. What you look like or what you wear or how you choose to dress. Like the pilot of the ship is naked and she's like a gleeful nymphomaniac and people treat her like a regular person, not like she's a slut. They want to write about that. You know, like, what if you just really like having sex, you know, stuff like that. So you want to read a book where it's like people are super diverse and no one ever brings it up. That's kind of like what I'm trying to do. It's what I'm trying to do with the future.
Love it.
And my vision of the future. I'm not actually, maybe I am changing the future. Who knows? Yes, you can find me on Amazon, start with one of those two books, OutSystem or Destiny Lost. And the books will actually kind of guide you through the entire universe as you go. Okay. And you can just sort of disappear into it. I don't object at all.
That sounds awesome.
And she has a spreadsheet if you need that to follow.
Yes.
That's my favorite thing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, if you go to my website, aeon14.com, aeon14.com, and go to the books, there's a link to the spreadsheet at the top of the page. And it actually gives everything in chronological order if you want to read that way. Some people like want to read by chronological order. Some people want to read by order of publication. You know, it's all sorts of stuff. Yeah, it's crazy. It's like, I don't know the order of publication. It's 102 books.
No accounting for that. That's an unusual preference. But
it is. Yeah, I was surprised.
So that's at aeon14.com. We'll put all this in the show notes too, so there'll be links. Mm-hmm. What about you? Anywhere people can find you on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, that kind of thing?
Yeah, Facebook search for Mallory Cooper. I don't tweet that much. Twitter has never worked for me. I was like one of the first 10,000 people on Twitter, and I just can't make it function.
That's fine. If you're not missing much.
Yeah. If you want to see my crazy cat suits, you can search for Mallory Cooper on Instagram. That's where I post most of my fashion stuff. And if you read my books and enjoy them, we have a Discord server too, where the fans hang out and talk. So you can always like pop in. The Facebook group is sort of the central area for all the information, but a lot of it will wander off from there into the Discord server to hang out as well.
Very, very cool. Lots of ways to find you. Well, thank you again for coming on. We greatly appreciate it. It's been fun. We hope to see you at future conventions, maybe future episodes. Absolutely. On here. And good luck to you with everything you're doing.
Thank you.
So anyone listening, watching, if you want to find us, or you can stream episodes at glitchypancakes.com or download us on all of your favorite podcast apps. We're on Amazon Podcasts now, as well as Apple and all the rest of them. We're on Twitter and Facebook at glitchypancakes. I'm on Twitter at Jesse_A_Adams.
And I am on Twitter at EIBlackout. That's EIIBlackout. Or on Facebook as Rob Yulemore. And Allie?
You can find me at Allie911, most any social media platform, if I am actually actively doing anything there. And also, let me plug Multiverse Convention coming October 16th through the 18th of this year, all online, all free. So if you guys would like to check out an online convention, please come and see us.
It'll be fun. Check it out. All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching/listening. And we will catch you on the next episode. Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.